Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all the shows that we do at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Hey, listen, if you are not already, and if you can afford it, I know right now it's a little tough for a lot of you, but if you can, you can become a Major Spoilers patron by signing up at patreon.com/majorspoilers, where you will get access to a bunch of bonus content.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, we return to Astro City and Points West with a few local heroes, explore the Edo period with Usagi Yojimbo, assemble the Sacred Six, and have a nice cup of tea with Peruvia and Lottie. Plus, all the movers and shakers in pop culture, maybe a little comics, maybe a little TV, maybe you have some of these delicious Milano cookies, and we go to bed without brushing our teeth. You don't even try to stop us. You can't stop us, because we love comics, and you do too. So let's all lose our minds as the Major Spoilers Podcast takes to the air.
Welcome to issue 883 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Listen, do not go to bed without brushing your teeth. You want to brush your teeth at least three times a day.
Nope.
Yes.
One time in college, 37 of us split a bottle of Manischewitz and went to bed without brushing our teeth. We were wild men. We were rebels, Dottie.
Yeah, and how bad are your teeth?
My teeth are perfectly fine. I still have, how
two
many
of
are
them.
You born with?
Two of them. You still have
two
of them.
I've lost three. And one of them was not due to any sort of mistreatment.
It just fell out.
No, it cracked.
It got teen wolfed
away. Oh, it got teen wolfed away. Oh, if you want to hear more about that, then you definitely want to check out the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show. It's over there at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Let us get to some news. There's a new Elephant Men comic over at Comixology. Stargirl gets a second season in Aliens and Predator. Go to Marvel. Let's spin that wheel of destiny. Let us see where we land. Around and around and around it goes. Where it lands. Oh, man. Get to the choppa. No, is that the right movie? I don't even know if that's the right movie or not.
That's
True Lies.
Oh, that's True Lies. Okay.
No, I think that may be Predator.
That may be Predator.
Oh, man.
No,
yeah,
True
yeah.
Lies. That's the news, man. That's the news right now.
So this announcement was made last week, just prior to the July 4th holiday. Ashley and I talked about this briefly on last week's Finally Friday. I have a feeling that this was supposed to be a San Diego Comic-Con announcement, but Marvel has announced that it will now be publishing Alien, Predator, and Alien vs. Predator comics in 2021. Ooh. So C.B. Cebulski over at IGN did an interview with IGN, and he said, there's nothing more thrilling than a story that will keep you at the edge of your seat, and Alien and Predator have delivered that time and time again. And now it's going to happen in Marvel. He didn't really say that part, but I don't know.
See.
So here's the thing. I mean, a lot of people are like, what? How did this happen? And it's like, well, you kind of saw this coming. And I think we may have even talked about this on the Major Spoilers Podcast.
I believe we did. Being like, are they going to do this?
Yeah. So when Lucasfilm was purchased by Disney, and we were like, oh, so what happens to Star Wars? And Star Wars left Dark Horse and went over there to Disney, where they have the Star Wars stuff. And then just a few years ago, the Conan series, which was over there at Dark Horse, suddenly those rights were acquired by Marvel. And guess who's now publishing Marvel comics or Conan comics? Marvel. So last year, when the 20th Century Fox deal was closed, it was only a matter of time before, guess what? Dark Horse loses another property in the form of Predator and Alien and Predator versus Aliens.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember a really memorable Alien or Predator comic book. And the only one that I can think of is the time that Warren Ellis used the Alien to clear the decks for a relaunch of Stormwatch, where they actually had the heroes of Stormwatch get eaten by an alien and killed so that they could bring in their new team.
They did do a pretty cool Aliens and Predators versus Superman and Batman. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the first volume of the Batman one is good. Also, Predator versus Archie's pretty good.
Yeah, Predator killed Reggie Mantle. So
he killed more than just Reggie Mantle. He killed a lot of people in that series.
That's points for the Predator, as far as I'm concerned.
So I guess the interesting thing about this is that Aliens in the Marvel Universe? Rodrigo.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's the exciting part. Isn't there literally an image that Marvel released with like the Predator holding Iron Man's robot head?
And then standing on top of the Avengers Tower. Yeah, that's the promo image. Although the weird thing is, they went back, I think it was on Friday, Ashley, that they did say that, yeah, even though the promo image shows that, these are not going to be part of the Marvel universe. And I'm guessing there was a big asterisk by that. And then if you look down at the bottom of their speech in really small 2-point type, it said, for now.
Well, right. Yeah, until such a time as the sales of those books demand that we introduce Iron Man into them, which seems to be, you know, the standard over at the Marvel. I mean, as somebody with like no emotional investment in either properties, cool. Hopefully they do something dope with it. Considering that Cerian Holm just passed, maybe something around that character would be timely and interesting. Pretty sure he's dead, though. The character as well as the actor. But yeah, I don't know. This is like a weird thing to be excited about because, I mean, the press release is all well and good and everything, but Alien and Predator, certainly from my perspective, are properties that just keep getting false started.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think from the movie side, I could see that. But there were definitely, I mean, Alien is what is one of those properties that made Dark Horse a number three publisher.
Yeah, you're fair. Absolutely right. Yeah.
Alien is a big, or at least, I don't want to say used to be, but Alien was and could again be a big deal. And I think Predator to a slightly lesser degree. The problem with the Marvel Universe is that because of comic book practices, basically the aliens and the Predators already have characters just like them in the Marvel Universe.
Yes, the Brood. That was the one that came to mind as well. You've already got the Brood, so do you really need Alien in that universe? But then maybe you do. Where do you want to see Alien pop up first? If they do, when that little asterisk gets rubbed out by somebody, you know, licks their thumb and scratches it out, where do the aliens show up first? What comic book property?
Easily X-Men.
You think X-Men, because not Guardians of the Galaxy or Nova Corps?
X-Men. Yeah. X-Men periodically does that for some reason we're in space nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like space X-Men meeting the Predator or the alien or meeting an alien and allying with the Predator, I don't know. Whatever you end up doing, you have, you know, the X-Men, you get your Imperial Guard guys in there. Sure, Guardians makes sense until you think about the fact that you can have Wolverine fight a Predator. Wolverine.
No, I'm talking specifically about Alien.
Predator.
I'm talking about Alien specifically, not Predator.
Wolverine
right now.
Fights an alien.
Yeah, I mean, he would win because the acid isn't going to kill him.
Here's what happens. Wolverine gets a face hugger. The alien that comes out gets Wolverine's powers, but Wolverine doesn't die because he's Wolverine. So then Wolverine fights an alien Wolverine, bigger alien Wolverine.
Does it have adamantium exoskeleton?
I don't know that he'd inherit the adamantium, but let's just say yes.
And it's got that H.R. Geiger physique, but it's got Wolverine's face.
When the little mouth comes out of the big mouth, it makes the schnick sound.
No, it says bub.
bub.
It's got a little tiny cigar in his mouth.
Bub. No, you can't smoke in a Marvel comic.
Ashley, where does the Predator first show up in the Marvel Universe?
If you're Ashley and you're pitching with the hope of making as much money as possible, either Punisher or Deadpool to me is the logical choice.
Mm.
I will say when that image dropped of the Predator holding the Iron Man head, which is a striking image, certainly, I asked the internet who they thought, the Predator should fight first. And let me tell you, Marvel Comics fans were salty saying that anyone in the Marvel Universe could defeat the Predator, which is something I've been thinking a lot about and makes me laugh.
Well, the Predator comes because he's hunting the ultimate prey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if he wouldn't go after, as Matthew said, a Wolverine, if he wouldn't go after a Captain America or in the promotional art, if he wouldn't go after an Iron Man.
Yeah.
I could see a Predator going after that. I could see a Predator going after, and this is weird because, you know, I said no to Guardians before, like a Drax.
Mm-hmm.
Fighting a Drax or trying to get somebody.
Let's just have him fight Galactus and get it over with.
You know, Aliens versus Galactus would sell.
Here's my pitch for the Predator. He comes to Earth, but then like Doctor Strange like brands him, and now he has to hunt things for to help people. Mm-hmm. And so he teams up with the Man Thing and Ghost Rider. We call it Ooh. Headhunters, and it sells. And oh, and also a monkey. Pick a monkey. It goes hit on. Monkey. Put it on the hit cover. Monkey. Yeah, with yeah, Hit Monkey or the Gibbon or something. Put it on the cover. It'll sell.
Yep. They've been trying to make Fetch happen with Hit Monkey, and I feel like this is the pitch.
Yes.
That will turn Hit Monkey into the next big thing for 2010.
Yeah. I will say something though that we have seen a lot in modern comics is like we're pitching on this, and at least on my part, I'm trying to do a lot of it in a very like silly and humorous way, but crazy ideas in the right hands. Like,
yeah.
This could turn into a deceased or this is another Tom Taylor pull. I guess give this to Tom Taylor or an Injustice. Like those, mm-hmm. You can tell really cool, meaningful stories out of ideas that on the page you're like, there's no way this is going to be worth a damn.
Yeah.
So even though like for me personally, this is not like an integration that I'm very into, I hope whatever comes out of it's amazing.
Well, and so, I mean, that is one of the things, right? You can pitch out the craziest idea and see what happens. Mm-hmm. People for years were postulating, oh, what would happen if the Predators and the aliens finally met one another? And then I believe Dark Horse did the comic book and it went over really, really well. And then they said, okay, let's make a movie on this stuff.
Yep.
And people went nuts for it, even though I think the first movie was not as good as the second movie. I know they made two of those.
The movies didn't follow the comics.
No, they didn't, but
they
were
kind of a completely different thing.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I talked about it earlier, Archie versus Predator is very popular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that one was pretty good.
All the Archie stuff, you know, for how many years we were just like considering Archie comics like a non-issue. It's like, oh yeah, they're still coming out with their digests.
Yeah.
And then they did Life with Archie, then After Life with Archie, and then from there, you know, it's like, and all of these concepts that are just so stupid, like so stupid on paper, and it just, you get a good creative team and they knock it out of the park, and that's that.
You know,
comes
who you
around
can,
from cheese sandwich back to genius.
You know who you can thank for that one? Alex Segura.
Yes,
the genius behind making all those things happen,
the grandfather of Jupiter Jet, because he helped us work on that pitch.
Yeah, there you go. Very cool, listeners. What do you think about Aliens and Predator over there at Marvel? What does this mean for Dark Horse? Are we finally hearing? Well, I think at this point, Dark Horse has moved from a number three publisher down to like a number five publisher, I want to say. I think Boom has overtaken them, which was years ago when Major Spoilers started. Oh, by the way, 14 years. Hey, happy birthday, everybody.
Hey, we're like the same age.
I know, right? For more on that, make sure you listen to the pre-show. But I remember one of the things that I was talking with Boom about with their PR person was they really at the time wanted to be bigger than Dark Horse, and now they've done it. So I feel bad for Dark Horse. I think the only thing they have left is Hellboy, right, Ashley? I mean, they have independent stuff. They have Black Hammer.
Yeah, but Black Hammer ended, which is not to say that they won't, like Oni Press and Scott Pilgrim, keep reprinting that, and that it's not worth doing that. But I will say, even though this maybe feels like, you know, a loss on their behalf, I think this is a very exciting time for them to like reevaluate and bring in like amazing new creative teams and take wild risks.
Definitely.
Didn't they do an Avatar the Last Airbender comic?
Oh, they do have a lot of those. They still are. They have some OGNs. Yeah. Dark Horse is another one of those comics.
Good. The Legend of Korra ones are good.
Yep.
And I say this is not a Legend of Korra like stan. The comics are good.
Yeah. They've been doing a lot of OGNs just like Boom has been doing. And I think that they have found their niche with some of the YA stuff that they've been releasing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely pay attention to that. And listeners, again, what do you think? Head over to our Discord channel. You can talk about Aliens and Predator at Marvel. You can talk about Stargirl getting a second season. You might even want to check out that new Elephant Man, which is a Comixology original that's available right now. So go over and check out that Discord server. And you can, in fact, if you have a Patreon account, you can attach your Patreon account to your Discord, and you will get access to super secret areas of the Discord where on Thursday nights, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time, Matthew and I sit down and we record Dueling Review live just for our patrons. Live.
It's a show for you.
All right. Let us do some reviews.
Reviews.
Let us see what we have this week. I think everybody's got, Outlast week, Ashley. finally on the Disney Channel, something they were saving for a huge theatrical release, but because of all the chaos in the world, Lin-Manuel sold it.
But because their catalog got torpedoed, they said, we want to keep this subscriber month.
Yes, so Lin-Manuel Miranda sold Hamilton to Disney, and we got to see Hamilton on the small screen. I loved it. I want to see what your thoughts are, Ashley.
Oh, man. I mean, I loved it so much. I'm a huge musical theater person, which people find surprising about me, which I think is hysterical. I listened and memorized the musical before I saw the tour here. I've been familiar with Lin for a minute because I saw the original Broadway cast of In the Heights because I have a very indulgent mother. And I was super, super thrilled to see this. And I really wanted to talk about it here because, A, I didn't have the time to read something else. And two, because there's been a lot of like weird discourse about what this musical represents in pop culture, particularly given the fact that we're in the middle of this like social upheaval and reevaluation. And I've seen a lot of criticism come against Lin-Manuel Miranda for releasing this and for coming to Disney. And the phrase that I see tossed around a lot is sellout, which I think that's a phrase that we need to abolish. I think that's a very like young and naive attitude. Like we should all be so lucky to create one of the most important pieces of popular art and then just like art.
I can't see how I can't see how a millennial could like level that criticism. It's like everybody's just trying to make it. Like if you get your
if you get your one shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You can't waste your shot.
But I've seen that. I've seen people criticizing it, saying that this is like Uncle Tom, a wokeness for a white audience. And Broadway definitely has like issues around classism and elitism and like the price point of tickets. But that's a different discussion. I think this show is so important. And I think the fact that it was purchased by Disney and put on one of the largest streaming platforms in the world speaks to the level of importance that it holds. And I would really encourage people, even if you don't think you're into this portion of history, even if you don't think you're into rap, even if you don't think you're into musical theater, to check this out because it is so special. And even though all Broadway shows since the 70s have been filmed, they are hidden away in these little vaults like Disney, you know, and you get a little clip of them here, you get a little clip of them there, and someone pirates something every once in a while. So the fact that we are being allowed, because it is a gatekeeper situation, to experience this, I don't think it's something that people should waste. And if nothing else, look at it this way. We've basically taken Thomas Jefferson, the ickiest white guy in American history, and we've made him handsome, handsome man.
He's by far my favorite character in that, in his betrayal.
He is a national treasure.
Standout. Oakland, born and raised, sweet baby angel. I just can't say enough good things about it. And I really wanted to talk about it here on this platform because I know there is a lot of crossover between like a theater type of nerd and a comic book type of nerd. But if anyone has stayed away from it, I truly like want to encourage you from the bottom of my heart. And I said this to Steven on Finally Friday, like as someone who is in the process of becoming an American and who has really struggled with the idea of onboarding an American identity onto the person that I am. When I listened to this soundtrack for the first time, it kind of cracked that idea open and made it accessible to me. And so it holds this very special place in my heart. And the original Broadway cast is filled with such incredible performances. Like Christopher Jackson has been forever one of my favorite actors. He is one of the reasons that I went to AMDA because that's the school that he graduated from. Like, I think he's such an incredible performer. He plays Washington, who is, again, a difficult political figure. But for me, like his performance and the writing cracks open who this man was and why he's relevant. And my favorite type of art and the reason that my podcast is structured the way it is and the reason that I write YA the way that I do is because I like entertainment that has a strong educational bent and you can learn from. And this just does that firing on all cylinders. So I know we feel like everyone in the world has seen the Hamilton film, but if you haven't, just clear your afternoon, sit down, let it take you away. You will cry in the second act.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, you might even cry in the first act. Some of those moments are really good.
I mean, sometimes if you're me, you'll just cry because you're like overwhelmed
the entire time. That's how I was.
You know, spoiler alert for something that happened like hundreds of years ago when Philip dies, it ruins me every time till the end of the musical.
Yeah.
And hopefully when you've seen this, then you will be psyched for In the Heights, which has Anthony Ramos in it as the lead, whenever that gets dropped too. So it's just, I know it's the obvious thing, but I really wanted to talk about it. And
so you've seen the off-Broadway version, right, Ashley?
I've seen the touring company, yeah.
Okay, and then Rodrigo, you've seen the touring company one.
Yep.
Zach has seen it, and Zach, when he first saw it, he was just like, oh, Stephen, you got to listen to this. So I listened to the soundtrack a couple of times over the last 2 years, I think, 3 years, maybe more. I was familiar with the story, I was familiar with all the music in it, but watching the performance and actually being able to see it, especially with a lot of the cool, you know, the rotating set and, the rotating platform on the set and the cool things that they do when they're stopping time.
The choreography is outstanding.
Yeah. Yep. It's really, really good. I was very impressed with it. It really came together. I was like, it was July 3rd. We all sat down as a family to watch it. And I said, we're going to watch this. And I told the boys, listen, this is a musical. This may not be your thing. If you feel like this is boring you and you don't want to be a part of it, feel free to leave. Okay. Cause I wasn't going to force them into musical theater yet. The youngest lasted 15 minutes and he's like, I'm sorry, Dad, but I don't find this interesting. The boy, made it almost to the end of the first act. And his
just
big
like a solid 2 hours.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I should say he probably made it about 45 minutes. But he was just like, is it just music the entire time? And I'm like, yes. And he's like, well, I was kind of hoping it would be more like, you know, Disney musicals where there's talking and acting and stuff in between. I'm like, nope. I figured he would love it because he listens to hip hop and rap a lot. I figured he would be into it just for that. But yeah, he was out after 45 minutes. The wife really, really enjoyed it. We're kind of split in this house, 50-50. The grown-ups enjoyed it. The kids, maybe not so much. But
yeah,
again,
never trust a kid.
They haven't been exposed to too many musicals or musical theater. I was telling my wife that by the time I was my oldest son's age, I'd probably already seen 5 or 6 touring company musicals that had come through
Kansas
City. How many
of them
were
Oklahoma?
No, none of them Oklahoma. one of them definitely was The King and I with Yul Brynner before he passed, which was amazing.
Nice. Problematic casting, but
yeah,
nice.
I know, but it was still very cool. So, yeah, so I guess it comes from your perspective. Matthew, you've not seen any of the touring companies one, right? But you just seen this one?
No. Yeah, I saw the movie version this weekend. It was like, oh, my God. You know, the thing that I took away from it was it took me a minute to figure out that certain actors were actually doubling up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did not, my brain would not make the connection between David Diggs as Jefferson and David Diggs as Lafayette until I saw him dance.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing the moves, and I'm like, that's the same guy. And I swear to you, there is no way, and I can't pronounce the gentleman's name, but they call him Oak. There's
Oak.
No way.
I love
that
him.
No way that I should not have known that Hamilton and Hercules Mulligan were the same actor. And I did not know it until the credits.
Not Hamilton.
Not Hamilton. Madison.
Madison.
They're old people names. It's fine.
I believe he's on Chicago Fire now.
Station 19, actually. Because we watch Grey's Anatomy and he pops up every once in a while.
Yeah.
I truly love him. I think he's so handsome. And my favorite trivia fact is that him and Debbie Diggs did not have agents when they booked Hamilton.
Wow.
They were open call casting.
That moment, though, where they're doing the scene and all of a sudden the flags part and he busts out.
It's the best part in the whole musical. And they censored it.
That's the winner right there. I know. I was so... I saw Lin-Manuel tweeting we had to give up 2 F-bombs. I literally gave 2 Fs to get this show on the air. And I'm like, okay.
I get it. But I also think, like, as a consumer and then as a parent, like, you can have a discussion about... I mean, there's, like, literally an affair that happened. Like, there's way worse things that happened than the language choices.
Yeah.
And multiple people murdered. The shootings are a thing.
Oh, man. When it comes to the choreography and how they present the shooting with the one person who represents the bullet in slow motion. I was just like, that's brilliant. That is really brilliant.
And then as he's falling, the two other people taking him down in slow motion. And you're like, my gosh, it's so beautiful. And you almost don't really realize that they're there, even though you know they're there. It's just such a beautiful.
Well, and that's why with the, what is it? The Eye of the Hurricane song, or what was the
Hurricane? Yeah.
Yeah. Hurricane, where, you know, all the set pieces fly up and it's moving around and the platforms. It's really good. People just go see it. Thank you for that.
Have feelings.
No, it's good to geek out about those kinds of things. All right. Out this week from IDW Publishing, it's Usagi Yojimbo Color Classics number 4. So these are reprints of the original Stan Sakai stuff, but they've been colored by Rhonda Pattinson, who does a fantastic job in the coloring of these books. But if you've already read this stuff in the original black and white, probably like Matthew, these are going to be familiar to you. This is just like what IDW is doing with the TMNT classics, where they're reprinting those with color or just reprinting them in their entirety when they were in color. But this one features parts 7 and 8 of the Samurai storyline, which is interesting because, and this is the biggest. So both of the stories by themselves are fine. It is Usagi telling. What's the Rhino's guy's name? I always forget his name. Retelling, you know, his past, telling what happens when he, in his early days as a samurai and defending cities and defending the emperor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's all fine. Really, really good stories. The problem that I have with this is that, and I don't know if this is the way it was originally or not, but we start in the middle of part 7 of the samurai storyline. Then that comes to an end. And then they're in the tea house having their conversation. And the rhinoceros guy is just like, oh yeah, you know, tell me more of your story. And then we get into part 8 of the samurai story, which ends halfway in part 8 with a cliffhanger, which is fine. But I have a feeling that these would be better received. I have a feeling that these would be more interesting to read if it was almost standalone. If it was, here's the entirety of part 7, so you get, you know, the first act, second act, or in the same way with part 8, first act, second act, so you know everything that's going on in the story. I can see this as a way of getting you to come back and wanting to read the next issue so you can read what happened after that, because of the way that the story ends with the cliffhanger with the emperor's wife and kid being killed. Yeah, that's a pretty good cliffhanger. But at the same time, coming in somewhat confused, getting an interstitial, and then getting the first half of another story seems, I don't know, feels like something's missing here. And I really wish they would have just done part 7 or part 8 or both of them in one issue, but not splitting them up. That's
so
my biggest problem.
So are they reprinting the issues in their original order, or?
They are reprint. I don't know which order they're. I mean, these are Color Classics number 4. We are in part 7 and 8 of the Samurai storyline. So I'm guessing that, you know, over the course of 4 issues, you're getting, you know, essentially 3.5 stories worth of content, 3.5 stories of this. So I don't think that they're reprinting them in a chronological order. Maybe they are, but they're collecting these and they're recolored and they do look really, really good in color. And that would be the reason why I would say to pick these up is to see the recoloring. I also think that there's something to be said about reading comics like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Yojimbo in their black and white form. What's his name? The Sergio Argonne's Gru the Wanderer, I believe, was originally in black and white.
I think Gru debuted in color.
Oh, did it debut in color?
Yeah, it was a Pacific comic back
okay.
in the day.
Or even Cerberus. I think there's something to be said about reading those in their original black and white and turning your nose up and saying, well, I don't watch black and white movies. I only watch color movies, or I only read color comics. I think is a little disservice in that sense. But I mean, if it gets people to read some classic comics and it gets them to, you know, buy these, I think that's fine as well. I would say it's pretty good. I know some people have been dying for me to read some Yojimbo stories that I would like instead of bagging on like I did the last time on the Dueling Review. This is fine. I enjoyed it. I just didn't like how the stories were split up. I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. I think it's good. I think if you're a Usagi Yojimbo fan, you're going to want to get these in the color form because, again, Rhonda Pattinson does a fantastic job of coloring these things. So I would say go pick it up. 3.5 slices of the meatloaf.
His name is Genosuke, by the way. Gen.
Oh, the rhinoceros guy?
Yeah, Murakami Genosuke.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Matthew, what do you got for us from Ahoy Comics?
Ahoy, the captain. Ash and Thorn, number 2. I actually reviewed number 1 probably a month ago, give or take, at Major Spoilers, the website. And I was really, really impressed with it, enough that this was something that I wanted to be on my radar and grab. So when this book, you know, was like, hey, here's this book, it'll be out tomorrow, I couldn't wait. So Ash and Thorn is basically kind of an elevator pitch. It's two old ladies, they're going to save the world. Essentially, it has a lot of elements in common with stories like Harry Potter or Buffy the Vampire Slayer, except that the chosen one, the champion, the person who has to save the world, is a woman in her late 50s named Lottie. And Lottie is kind of hysterical because Lottie is very much the no-nonsense character that you would expect if you have a woman who has already, you know, lived her whole life, had a family, done all the things that she's done, and then suddenly got told that she now has superpowers. Her response at the beginning of this issue is, I'm going to champion my wrinkled butt off, which I kind of like. I really enjoy the dialogue between the two main characters because her quote-unquote watcher character is almost a wannabe kind of witchy, arcane person. And she doesn't really know how it all works. I mean, she's read about it, but she's never done some of the things that need to be done. So when she has to go through in this issue and actually summon a creature from beyond, it's more of an academic exercise for her. And when it doesn't work, and then it does, she doesn't understand the difference. It's kind of an interesting take on everything. And as much as you can say, you know, the classic elevator pitch of what if Buffy was 60 years old, it's more than that too. I actually really enjoyed this issue as well, with, you know, my normal complaint that I get, there's kind of a middle chapter-itis that will pop up. You'll get to a point in the story where you're like, okay, this is important for later, and this is important for later, and here is some very important world building, and here's a thing that's going to pay off for us in issue 5. There is a point, especially in issues 2 and 3 of a series, where that can kind of drag you a little bit. So I feel like maybe I liked issue 1 a little bit more, but I also like the new concepts, the new characters, and the changes being introduced here. There is kind of a big twisty part near the end of this issue that I enjoy that I don't want to spoil for anybody who hasn't read it. Mm. But here's the deal. Ash and Thorn is a very good book. And if you've never heard of Ahoy Comics, I think you should go check it out. You should look them up. 4 slices of meatloaf for Ash and Thorn number 2. And once again, the dialogue is, first of all, adult, but also really, really funny. There's a couple of F-bombs in here that are worth the price of admission.
Very nice. Rodrigo, we're going to wrap up our review section with a book that you picked up this week.
Yes, Sacred Six number 1, which I picked up as I pick up a lot of things sight unseen. And I was like, Sacred Six, that sounds fun. Pick it up. And apparently it's a spinoff of a Vampirella. that's cool. It's off of this newest volume of Vampirella. And the thing here is that there's a town called Sacred, and it's full of vampires that are trying to be good. But there are bad vampires that want to mess with them. So they're going to get together. Eventually, we'll have together a bunch of like cool peeps that have their own comics or have had their own comics. You know, your Draculinas and your Panthas and your Chastities. And they're going to presumably come together and Magnificent Seven it up. It's confusing because, not knowing what's going to happen, there's a group that they refer to as the Six. So I'm like, are those the Sacred Six? Because that's not the main characters. And it's like, it looks like there's only going to be 4 main characters. So I guess the Sacred Six are this like cadre of like spooky vampires. But again, I'm coming at this blind. I haven't kept up with the new Vampirella stuff. So maybe my confusion shouldn't be here. Maybe it would have potentially been explained in Vampirella. This issue is fun because it's a bunch of vignettes. It's a little jarring because the very first vignette is by a different artist from the whole rest of the book. And the art style is very, very different. Like, the artist at the beginning of the book has a clean style where the characters have like very round heads. It looks kind of like animated. It's got kind of a manga-esque type of feel to it. And then the other artist does these like painting and like hard, scratchy lines, and characters have very human proportions. So I had to go back when I first saw it, and I was like, are they putting backups at the beginning of comics now? They're not. Mm-hmm. This is just, you know, kind of a little bit of a guest artist thing, I guess. But it's jarring. It's strange because the art styles are so, so different, right? If each of these vignettes had a different artist and the art style was different between them, that would make more sense. But really, only a couple of them, or only one of them, has a different artist, and everything else is by the regular artist of the series. So that threw me a little bit. You know, other than that, like I said, I'm not super familiar with the current iterations of these characters. I'm pretty sure I've encountered at least three of these characters before in other stuff. But most of them are wearing way more clothes than I remember. So that's already a bonus. It's another issue is that the comic, this issue never comes together. It's a bunch of vignettes and you don't see them all get together at the end. It feels like those old number zero issues that you used to get with the Wizard magazine, where it's like, we can't actually tell any of the story here, but here's the characters like shaving and putting on their pants like right before the action kicks on in issue number one. And that's a lot. This feels like that. There are conversations, and I'm sure those conversations are important, but we, like, when you read the solicitation, we haven't gotten there yet. Like, what it says in the solicitation, that's actually not in this issue. That might be the series. And frequently that's what happens with solicitations, is your number one issue solicitation is the pitch for the series.
Yeah.
Don't go in expecting to have all these characters really even interacting with each other. You just kind of get to see them from afar. So that's not bad, but it doesn't click together. So I'm going to give it 3 slices of meatloaf. Art's good. Story's good. No major problems. Above average effort, definitely. Just a few issues here and there.
All right. Very good. Thank you for that, Rodrigo, and everyone else for your reviews. Listeners, if you want even more reviews, make sure you head over to majorspoilers.com. That's where you're going to find reviews on the site every single day of the week. Now we get to the point of the show where I tell you, hey, fall is just around the corner. It's going to turn colder. You're going to want to bundle up. Why don't you head over to isotoner.com and make some purchases. Find some cool gloves or some boots or a scarf or a hat or a brooch. And
or a pterodactyl.
Or a pterodactyl, yeah. And when you go to check out, you can save yourself 25% by using the checkout code MAJOR, MAJOR at checkout. Get 25% off at isotoner.com. Let's dive into a trade paperback, why don't we? This week, it's Astro City Volume 5, Local Heroes. And this one's a little bit different. In previous volumes, we look at the first family taking on the worst family. Or we get to see, the Samaritan doing some Samaritan-type stuff. This week, it's all about the little people, right? All about the little people that populate the city of Astro City. And as I read this, it kind of reminds me a little bit of DC Comics' Gotham Knights series that they did back in the late 80s and 90s, where it was, hey, let's not focus on Batman, let's not focus on Huntress, let's not focus on the superheroes, let's focus on these stories of people from the streets and get their perspective on what's going on in this crazy city. And that's what we get here. Most of the stories contained in Astro City Volume 5 are standalone stories, except for one, which is a two-parter, which features a lawyer who is defending a mobster's son and decides to use the superhero defense to get the guy a not guilty plea by saying, do we really know it was him who murdered him, even though there were all these witnesses? Remember this time that this superhero was mind-controlled, or these doppelgangers, or these evil takes on them from another dimension? How do we know that wasn't there? And it was just enough doubt in the jury to get the guy acquitted. But also in the meantime, we find out that he has a friend who's a police officer who does happen to be a vigilante, which Rodrigo might have a little bit of foreshadowing for another volume.
Yes.
Not going to say that Rodrigo's doing his work ahead of everyone else on this panel this week, but Rodrigo's definitely reading ahead.
I was, largely because I forgot which volume we were supposed to do and read the wrong one.
Yeah. Hey, I've done that before.
Yeah.
It happens.
It does happen. Next volume,
gotta be great, you guys.
So we get to see what happens to aged heroes that think that they've retired and they've pulled me back in for one last job. We get to see what else, Matthew? We get to see what happens to an average doorman in Astro City.
We get to see what happens outside of Astro City. Heroes who aren't necessarily part of the whole city game. And we get to see what happens when you're making comics about actual living super beings with actual superpowers, and whether or not lying is a good idea in those situations.
Oh, and if you want to see what happens with that story, if you also want to see all of the big names in comics getting name dropped, that is definitely the issue to read. Now, this is the story. What is that one called? I don't have it here in front of me.
That is the with the thing in the face and the other thing.
So it's about a woman who.
Where the action is.
That's the name of it. It's fascinating because you do kind of get a little look inside the comic industry about what would happen if we were taking these stories and telling true comic stories. And this guy who's always able to talk his way out of any predicament until one day it doesn't. But this woman writer that works for the company is like, no, this isn't right. This isn't right. And she keeps staying with the comic book company because she's like, I'm going to stay here and write him a story that he does like until the day that I can't anymore because something happens to the building.
Yeah, well, some things happen to Manny, the publisher. I think my favorite part of that is the fact that that's clearly Stan Lee.
Oh, yeah,
Julie
everybody's
Schwartz
in there.
And Gil Kane and Mark Evanier. And I'm just like, okay.
Oh, no, they name drop those. In fact, I believe the panel that Manny is on is hosted by Mark Evanier. And you can zoom in. You can zoom in to their name badges. And you can see there's Mark Waid sitting at a booth.
Devin Grayson is featured in this as well.
Mark and Devin were together at the time, so they're in the same booth.
Yeah.
This was the 90s. These things were happening then. It was many years ago.
So did you guys have, Ashley, did you have a favorite story out of all of these?
I really liked Pastoral. I thought that was very sweet. The story about Roustabout, I liked quite a bit.
What about that one did you like? Because I kind of got the sense that when it was all said and done, everyone was making a big deal about her being, oh, you're from the big city and you get to see all these heroes. And yet part of me wants to say that everyone in that town was secretly making fun of her because they all knew that they had their own hero and knew who he was.
I like it because it does something that I like in a Superman story. I like in a Superman story proceeding with the idea that everybody in Smallville knows that Clark is Superman and that the small town mentality, which they touch on in Pastoral, of everybody knows everything about everyone, is what leads them to protecting him because he's the little boy that they grew up with who just happens to be able to save the world, and they can thank him and they can save him by having his back. I also got a kick out of the fact that it's the same character model as Cracker Jack, but he's like a good guy and Cracker Jack's a complete butthead. And don't get me wrong, I am here for Cracker Jack. The man is a good time. I found that story very sweet. And also because Cammy, the protagonist, the narrator of that, would have been very me at that age. And we all like to see ourselves reflected in the stories.
What about you, Matthew? Did you have a favorite story?
My favorite story is always going to be, I think it's called Shining Armor, the story of Atomicus, which is basically an inversion of all the tropes of Silver Age Superman, where the new superhero comes to town and the girl reporter is trying to unravel his secret. And throughout the thing, she just won't let go of it. And she keeps fighting it. And she thinks that this is all part of the game. And it's really not. But I really love the way that story plays with every comic book featuring Superman between 1957 and 1970.
I was going to say, what I liked about that is it feels like it is a Lois Lane story, right?
Yeah,
Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, where she's trying to constantly figure it out and try to prove, aha, you really are Atomicus. And turns out that, you know, the guy is just, he went into a secret identity so he could figure out what it meant to be a human so he could be with her. But because she just wouldn't let up, the guy goes crazy and he's like, I'm out of here. I can't stand it, woman. And
I don't want any part of being a human. And
yeah,
the best part is that the actress is clearly Rosemary from the Dick Van Dyke Show, or at least the character likeness. So throughout
the
that whole thing,
was, yeah,
it's Sally Rogers. And I'm like, oh, but yeah, that Atomicus story is the one that really, when it came out, really resonated with me. But still really holds up because it's not just an examination of here's some stupid things that used to happen in comics, y'all. It takes it, makes it a human story, grounds it all in reality, and still has a character who is accidentally an atom brought to life running around in a cape. And that's what Astro City does so well.
Yeah, in that story about the woman that works for the comic book publisher, she's like, oh yeah, I've written fictional comic book characters like Batman and Captain Atom, but I wanted to write about real heroes. I was like, oh man. You can tell at this point he is being published by DC, right, Matthew, or not? Or is this...
These would have all come out under...
Wildstorm?
I believe, because I have the trade of this, I believe it's still a Wildstorm trade dress.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. I want to say that it doesn't come around to being a DC book until the Vertigo launch in like 2015 or something.
Okay, okay.
But it's a Wildstorm book, and Wildstorm gets bought by DC while the title is on hiatus, so...
Yeah, and this was after... Was this the first thing that came out after a hiatus or not?
This would have been before the hiatus. This is the end of the first... Well, the second... It's the ongoing volume, and then the five-issue Local Heroes miniseries, and then... The Supersonic story came out as a one-shot special.
Okay. All right. Rodrigo, did you have a favorite story out of all of this?
I really did like Shining Armor a lot, and I liked the Doorman story just because that's like when I think of Astro City, is like this is the sort of story that I think about is like what do normal people do? While all these superheroes are like bouncing around and doing all this crazy stuff. So this is kind of like a cut across because it kind of focuses on a bunch of tourists to Astro City or a bunch of temporary people that are not going to stay for very long. So you kind of get a fresh perspective because a lot of the people that live in Astro City are over it. You know, they're just like, oh, I almost got killed today by, you know, a giant monster, like, oh well, whatever. But it's nice to see people reacting to it. And then, you know, when you get to see the Doorman story, is like he starts the story and it's like, yep, that's when I decided that I was going to leave as soon as I could, and then he didn't, and he kind of likes living in Astro City.
That's that kind of, I like that one a lot too. That one is probably the one that got me most sentimental about the dusty room that I was reading this in. But it also felt very much like the, I think it was in volume one, where the people just had moved into town. And then that night, you know, all heck breaks loose in the city. And then they decide to, they were like, oh, we're going to get out of here. And then the next day they're like, you know what? This wasn't so bad.
Yeah. And that's intentional because Local Heroes number one came after an extended break. Astro City Volume 2, 22 was the last issue that came out in 2000. And I want to say Local Heroes doesn't come around until like 2003. So they were intentionally calling on that and bringing it back and going, okay, here again, we're going to introduce you to what Astro City is for you guys who haven't been paying attention. Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, the family that comes to visit and was like, oh, we really like this place. That's not the same family that ended up moving and then deciding that maybe we don't want to stay here and then decided to come back, right? I mean, that's not one of those weird things where Kurt Busiek is reweaving the stories and telling them a little bit out of order so that you go, ah, okay, now this makes sense.
Not that I'm aware of, but here's the thing. In about issue 46, you meet a character and I'm like, oh, wow, this is a new character. And Busiek was like, no, she appears in issue 1. Go back and check. And I went back and she is literally in issue 1. So it's one of those things where it could be something that we just haven't caught yet.
Yeah.
It's the history of Astro City is so thoroughly plotted out. Mm-hmm. It's like in the Shining Armor one, she's working for a mayoral candidate. And that campaign and that politician is like relevant to both previous stories and future stories, right? Yep. Like there's like the big obvious stuff like the Silver Agent. Everybody's like, oh, the Silver Agent. Again, payoff in next volume.
Right.
But there's all this smaller stuff, all of these things that are like this. It's like you have to like really get into it to be like, oh, yeah, they're in like this district. This district eventually changes names because a space monster hangs out there for a while and turns all the buildings into cheese.
Right.
It's like, and later on, they're like, let's drive over to Grugier or whatever. You know, it's like that's not actually something that happens in Astro City, but it's this type of stuff that happens in Astro City. And it happens constantly. And I feel like unless you're constant, like it's like when you're reading Astro City, to get that stuff, you almost have to like, it's like you are trying to memorize it. It's like, okay, volume 5, I have to read volumes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Volume 6, I have to read volumes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, like in order to like just kind of buffer everything into my brain of what all the like internal references are, forget all the external references to comic books, comic book creators, pop culture, and other media that are happening simultaneously, and also all the commentary about, I guess, life in the 90s.
Yeah, the 2000s. I will say this. The thing that I love the most about this is an in-joke that's only funny to me. When the girl is looking up Roustabout, she looks at Herocopia.com.
Yeah.
If you go to Herocopia.com, it is a functional wiki of Astro City.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
Oh, that's
really
cool.
I thought it might have been.
20 years later.
I thought it might have been, but I was like, I'm too lazy to go type it into the computer and see if it's a real address.
I'm not saying that I use Herocopia on a regular basis. I'm just saying that you should, you know, check it out, because
well,
it's actually pretty cool.
I'm curious.
It's actually great.
You've interviewed Kurt multiple times for Major Spoilers, Matthew. Has he ever talked about having a, when he was going into Astro City, is each arc, is each story thought up at the time, or is this something that he has a huge series Bible that says, okay, this happened in this time period and this happened in this time period. If I'm going to make a reference to that, I want to make sure it's consistent with my story Bible. Or does he just, I'm just this series, I thought it'd be cool to have this character pop up. And in the background, we saw a reference to something that I've written before or what I was thinking of coming up next.
The way I understand it is that the characters, many of the characters and the broad strokes of the events are definitely either in his head or in conversations between him and his collaborators, because Alex Ross and Brent Anderson are co-creators on the book as far as he's concerned. Mm-hmm. So there's broad strokes, but there's also things like the Silver Agent story that Rodrigo read this week by accident that we won't get to for another couple of months. That Silver Agent story was planted in the very first issue. So it's one of those things where he knows where things are going to go. A lot of times it's a question of how to turn it into the particular story that needs to be told. And a lot of times it's, hey, what can I say with X character? You know, we see the Blue Knight in this issue in the 1970s. And the next volume kind of gets into the Dark Age, which is not just about the 1970s as a period of malaise or 70s comics or, you know, the beginning of characters like the Punisher, but instead all of those things. And I think that's what makes the Astro City work, is these characters are there, out there, just kind of floating around waiting for the story that they need to be in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's interesting because, you know, they do mention multiple times across the volumes, oh, here, remember when during this time period everyone was talking about, what is it, the Astro 11 or whatever they were.
Right, the Apollo 11.
The Apollo 11, mm-hmm. Sorry. And you're like, oh, they keep mentioning it during this time period, and every time we do a flashback, oh, here's this. And I think that's happened. I think the Apollo 11 have been mentioned in at least one or two other volumes prior to this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, oh, yes, remember this happened. And it's almost planting these seeds for like, okay, now I'm going to tell you the Apollo 11 story, and it's going to blow your mind.
And it's not just a question of, oh, I want to do my take on cosmic Marvel. Although, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of that in there, especially because it all takes place in the 70s. But if you look at specifically the Apollo 11, here's the thing about the Apollo 11. It is masterclass level writing, because it is a team with 11 members, 11 characters in play, and you're trying to tell a story that's meaningful to all of those characters and also keep up the broader canvas and also tie it into the overarching story plot. And, you know, having all of these things brought together really does show off what Astro City does best. It's the fact that no matter what volume you jump in, you're probably fine. You're not going to have to read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in order, even if Rodrigo chooses to, and I'm totally down with that. But if you pick up this book, I feel like you're going to get as good an introduction to Astro City as if you pick up, you know, any other volume. And that's the best part of it.
I'm reading Astro City in the Silver Agents chronology. So I actually started like two volumes from now and have now just read volume one.
Yeah, that joke will be really funny come September, faithful spoiler. So write that down.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, you know, all of this stuff is about, hey, you're leaving Astro City, thanks for hanging out. And yet the cowboy story, well, I forget, Pastoral.
Pastoral.
I kind of like to see what's going on outside of Astro City. What does the rest of this universe look like? And is that something that you guys would be interested in seeing, or should this series only be in Astro City?
No, I'd love to see more, and I think that we do, simply because it's actually, you know, sometimes for the story that needs to be told, it's hard, right? We went out of Astro City when we met, like, the Mock Turtle. The Mock Turtle starts out in Europe, and eventually makes it to Astro City and doesn't last long there, but we do get to see that there are superheroes in other places. We do get to see what other places are like. It's just like Astro City is like the hub for weirdness, basically. It's kind of the either explicitly or not, like this like nexus for magical things and sci-fi things, and does like it just generates and attracts all of these weirdos.
Essentially New York City in the Marvel Universe.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Ashley, what'd you think of this volume?
I think, here's the thing about Astro City. Everything about Astro City is so well planned. It is so well intentioned. It is so well executed. All that being said, this is probably my least favorite volume far. I don't know. This is the one that felt the most like homework to me. And maybe that's because it is a collection of shorter stories, whereas the previous volumes are all serving an overarching narrative, even if there are one-offs or like sort of side quests here and there throughout the overall narrative of the collection. I would say for the most part, I liked all these stories, but very few of them like really captured me the way previous stories have. Mm-hmm. That's all.
And do you think maybe that's because everything is done in one, whereas in other stories, we've got multiple issues where we get to explore these characters and explore their interesting dynamics?
I think so. And I also think because we're coming right off of basically the Batman and Robin Nightwing story, mm-hmm. which is very close to just my heart and my biases. And like, these were good, but I'm going to be honest, like I did not for one second enjoy the comic book writer. I really didn't like that story. All the Easter eggs were really cute. It was really smart. It was obviously well planned. It was obviously well intentioned. It just was not to my taste. So yeah. If I were to go back and read Astro City, I just don't think this is a volume I would revisit. But I mean, like in good conscience, like, you know, on the meatloaf scale, I don't know if I can give it less than a 4, but did I particularly enjoy it? Not so much.
Okay. All right. What about you, Rodrigo? Some final thoughts from you.
I like volumes like this. Volumes where there isn't an overarching story, free your brain to really just get into what the writer is doing here, right? And what the creators are doing, what they're commenting on, and what they're looking at. When you don't also have to think about like which one of these is a shape-shifting space alien, or like which of these guys is like. Or like, oh, we keep hearing this phrase repeated over and over again. What does that mean? It kind of opens up to the references and all this other stuff. And, you know, Astro City is like the comic book nerd's comic book. And volumes like this really free up that side of you to be like, I know who that is. Or, mm-hmm. or whatever else, right? Or like, oh, this is a commentary on like this aspect of comics.
Mm-hmm. So would you recommend it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I really enjoyed this volume as well. I think there were a couple of stories that I was like, I really don't care for them as much. But I still like the Doorman story was really fantastic. I think the very final story in here, in this volume, I was just like, it's okay. I could pass on this. So I'm probably a little bit...
That was from the September 11th special that DC okay. put out in 2001.
Okay. I kind of feel with Ashley that really I think this is a 4. I like the anthology feel of it. Like I said, I like Let's See How the Other Half Live aspect mm-hmm. of it. But there were just one or two stories that I was like, this feels like a drag reading it. I'd rather skip it, but I want to read it just to see what other little Easter eggs are there. So I would recommend it. I would say that... Yes, definitely. If you're going to read everything, this is definitely one you want to read. But at the same time, if there was a volume that you could probably skip and still probably understand what was happening, this would probably be that volume. So still really enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. Still really enjoyed it. I would say that this is a buy, but I don't think that this is a must buy of these volumes. Matthew, final thoughts from you.
I think that in a lot of ways, this is a back to basics for Astro City, because volume one and to a large degree, volume two was very much here are 5 vaguely related stories. There was a little bit of continuity. And of course, we got, you know, the first volume began with Samaritan and ended with Samaritan on a date. And then we get into that first volume and we get a lot of weird stuff, and it has the arch with the aliens who come to Earth, but the long Steeljack and Confessor arcs kind of changed the expectations of what an Astro City collection should be. So when we get to this, it's very much like volume one, to the point where that first story feels like the first story of volume mm-hmm. one. And I love it, because that's what dragged me into Astro City. This volume has a couple of my favorite stories. It also has Where the Action Is, which I dislike. You know, not necessarily actively dislike, sort of the, you know, your brother-in-law is a jerk and you have to spend time with him in a room twice a year dislike. As long as you stay away from politics and football, you're fine. You know, it's one of those things where, is it my favorite chapter? Is it my favorite volume? No. Is it a very good volume? Yes. Did I like it more than you and Ashley? Absolutely. And I think that if you were of a thought process of, I really want to make sure I know what's going on in volume 6 and volume 7, this is something that may have ramifications later. And that's part of the fun here too. After a long absence, the story was back. Here's a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to go for another couple of years and then it's going to disappear on you. But you don't know that 2003, Matthew. So shut up and read The Street Angel.
There you go. All right, listeners, that will wrap it up for this installment of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers Experience.
And as part of the Major Spoilers Experience, we want your feedback. So use the comments section at Major Spoilers to share your thoughts and reactions to this episode.
Or even better, send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com.
And don't forget, you can support this show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
We're going to be back next week to talk about the Shadow Roads. Ooh, what is that all about? Well, you're going to have to come back and find out next week, because we know that you love comics, and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books, or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your things if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2020 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.